parachute infantry, and I brought back in September. I was out in California, and we're on the way to go to Korea. A fellow named Chet Dabrisky, he was right in front of me. They took him and put him on the boat and sent him out, and they left me there with 2,000 or 3,000 people or whatever it was. Finally, the war ended in April the 14th or whatever it was, 7th or something like that. And I stayed out there for about a month. They finally brought me back to Fort Bragg, and I was made, I was in charge of Fort Bragg Golf Course. They had a bunch of Italians that were working on it at that time. And so at that time, the captain and the lieutenant, they went over to Pinehurst. I had a car. I had a Chevrolet car, an old Chevrolet. You know, I used to drive them over there and play golf with them day. And that's where I met Mr. Ross. And I got to know him a little bit. He was with, God dang, what the hell's the name of that guy? The guy was chairman of,
one of the big industrial guys?
Yeah, industrial guys.
Yeah, he liked people like
so
that.
So anyhow, they would drive around and watch us play, and I got to know him a little bit and talk to him a little here and there at different times. And I went over there, probably 30 or 40, 50 times.
While you were still in the Army.
Yeah, in the Army. we'd leave at noon or go over there and play golf and come back. And so I got to know them, and I knew him from just say hello, how you doing,
right,
and so forth. And at that time, he told me a little bit about the golf course. And I wasn't really interested in golf course design at the time, but it kind of caught on to me a little bit. And then I went back to I think I got out in April or May. So I was there from July, I mean August, September, and April and May. And then I discharged. And so I went back and I went to school different places.
Yeah.
And I didn't pass anything.
No, that happens with geniuses a lot, yeah.
But anyhow, I went to school in different places, and I ended up at Rollins a year later. My mother took me down there and got me into school, and I didn't pass anything down there, but I was there for 2 years. When the war was over, 45, right?
Yeah, 45, yep.
Yeah, I went down there
down in Florida for a couple of years at Rollins.
I went down there in 46, see?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was there for 2 years, and then I went up to DeLand, stayed around there. But anyhow, I played a lot of golf, and that's where I met Alice. She was a junior, a freshman down there. But anyhow, that's where I met her.
And she was already a good player by that point.
Good player, oh yeah, and then I went up to Indianapolis to see her, and a big house, and it was a great big house, and she must work there. I went to the back door, and the guy said, "Well, you come around the front door." And I went around the front door. Here she comes down the stairs.
Oh my goodness!
So now, where are we? We finally got married in February, whatever it was.
Late 40s, 48 or 49.
50.
Okay.
I started working in Indianapolis. I was in the insurance business. I was the youngest life member of the Million Dollar Roundtable. Yeah, she was out, a member of the country club. Got in out there, and I tore that golf course apart and everything else. And about 10 years later, they were about ready to kill me, but they finally got it back in shape. And I went over, and I started in 1959 to build a golf course at Indianapolis, and somehow or another I stopped the insurance business, and I decided to go into the golf course design. And her family had some money, and they're about ready to kill me.
Oh, that's funny.
but anyhow, we went in into it. I never have drawn plans. I've just built golf courses ever since then. So everybody else has built 200. I built 80 or 81 or 82. Now, and I got 10 or 12 going. But I got 7 done and open, and the other 6 are underwater.
Yeah, I think we've lost about 68, I believe, of Donald Ross courses since he passed away. Just...
I would say the a lot of... See, he built three... See, he went around and he would lay it out, and then have a contractor build it.
Yeah.
And they're all different.
Yeah, he certainly did. He had different guys.
Yeah, different contractors. And they worked on... Then the step meter, which was what nobody knows, but
right.
The step meter was about 5 or 6, and everything was 2 and 3% on slope and all that, and the slopes coming in the green were 10%, and all that has changed dramatically changed in the last 15 years, 10 or 15 years, and the pros, Nicklaus used to hit the ball. I played a lot of golf with Jack after the war, and he hit it 265, 270 at the most, and now they're hitting it 330, and they've changed all the grasses and everything else in the last 10 or 15 years. It's all changed. And so now when I did it, just used to go out and have a crew, and I would lay it out and build it. It was according to the membership, and if the membership was going to be strong,
right,
then I would build it strong. If it was going to be weak, build it weak, and that changed quite a bit. And since the last 15 years, I've reduced the greens down from where they were.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. They're not flat. They're 10 or 12 on the step meter, and they're fast, and they're really fast. And right now, even the Gulfstream, where I just finished 18 holes, they were old. It was an old Donald Ross golf course, built in 23. And I turned around and I changed all the greens from what he had down to nothing, and changed the routing and so forth, and the bunkers. But the people all enjoyed it, and it's a membership. Now, the membership is 55 to 75, and they're the same people. Now, at Kiowa, I built that, and that was to be a resort course, and the people would come in there and play 3 or 4 times, then they'd be gone for a year or two, come back, and then they were always, but they always were good players, or 85 to 95, and then a lot of guys were 75 or 70 or 75. They all were good players, and they had 4 or 5 golf courses, and they all played differently. It's all Kiowa is a resort. It has
several courses.
5 golf courses there, I think. Yeah. So anyhow, the resort is doing okay, and I keep going back up there and modify it. But, you know, when I first built that thing 20 years ago, it was 7,000 or 7,200 yards. Now I've increased it to 74, 75. But it's 8,000 yards is what it needs to be.
To compare with what it was like with the old equipment, yeah, I mean, 6,500 yards then is like...
Yes, right, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now so, it's got to be 8,000. So the... But anyhow, I've been going back to with Mr. Goodwin, and then he's about ready to kill me. But I've built 6 or 7 golf courses for him. They're all different, and they're for different people. Donald Ross was great in his time. It changed dramatically.
Yeah, you're talking about his style of...
It went from 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 12 now. And so you at 12, you couldn't even putty as greens.
Yeah, there's no way that you could
way.
Well, the French Lick, his course at French Lick is, I think those are some of the wilder greens that he.
Yeah, yeah. Wait a minute. At French Lick, I went back there 8 or 9 years ago, and I rebuilt the one course up on the hill, and the other one, I reduced the roll on the greens dramatically.
Well, this if with this green speeds like that, there's no way you can have
too severe.
Right. Yeah.
But they don't. They keep it at 8 or 9 or 10 right there, and they don't go as fast as they do up at the hill course.
Yeah. And that was quite an engineering feat. Ross did a lot of engineering. When I started writing the biography, I didn't realize how much engineering he did with his courses. It was a lot more than I thought.
He did a lot of drawings.
Yeah.
And none of them are used.
Yeah. Just you mean the guys that were out there would kind of do what they saw fit.
That's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. But you like to your stuff. You like to be there yourself.
I was there an awful lot, but he would go by once or twice or three times or four times or five times.
Right.
Or six times, and they would and see it's six on the step meter, or five or six on the step meter. The greens were different.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely different.
Yeah.
Really, front to back and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, he didn't even get. They didn't have grass greens in Pinehurst until 1935.
No. he didn't have. They didn't have grass on the greens, and when he put the grass on the greens, the first one they put it on the main course.
Right. Yeah. Number two. Yeah.
And they put it on there in 1935 or 1936.
Yeah. Yeah. They sure did.
And they kept it there for a long time, and at that speed. But then when they finally changed the course, they slowed it down.
Yeah, I sure did.
They slowed it down some.
Did you play the other courses besides number two? Did you play the other courses?
I played all of them.
You played all of them? Yeah, I figured.
And I enjoyed it, and I did it. But I played the north south down there 5-6 times or whatever it was. And I enjoyed going back to Pinehurst. That was when Mr. Tufts was still running.
Yeah, he was there for a long time.
Yeah.
Did you find Mr. Ross to be an amiable guy? And
all that? Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He was very much that way, and very much a golfer. So, and I knew him quite a bit right after the war, and then for the next 5 or 6 years.
Would you say that Pinehurst being there on that course was sort of got your interest going?
When he built Pinehurst number two, he changed everything as he went along. They got the greens slower. A little bit slower as he went on. But he never saw 12.
Yeah, I don't think they had those back then.
No, so, they didn't have anything like that.
You know, they're switching all the greens here to the new Bermuda. It's been bent here since I was a kid, which was the 1970s. It's been bent grass since then. But Bermuda grasses, they're putting in on all the courses here now. So it can survive the summer a lot better than those bent grass greens can, that's for sure.
That's so much faster than the old grasses.
Yeah, I remember the old Bermuda where they kind of followed the sun from the grain.
It did all the time.
Yeah, putting was a lot different. Like the era, you know, you're talking about whenever you're putting six on the stimp meter on this thick Bermuda. It was a whole different kind of putting stroke and all of that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was entirely different. And the last, you know, when I see some kids working on it today, the kids on the TV and all that, you know, they barely touch the ball, and the ball rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls. If you have too much slope, it's just nothing.
Which one did you prefer? I mean, as far as your own playing pleasure, I mean, did you prefer having the really sculpted sloped greens on that.
Well,
I mean,
well, you know, I enjoy Pinehurst. I really did, but I didn't know what I was looking at. And so after a while, I finally dawned on me that as the greens got faster, that you had to slow them down, and it had to change everything. It had to change the whole slope. In other words, the greens, Pinehurst, when I first were down there, the slope come in and off the green, it would come at 10%. It would drop a foot. Now it drops 5 to 7 inches. And then the slope's going off the green were 3%, and now they're 1.5. So you change the whole situation. It everything changes around there. But you know, the thing is, it's amazing to me that the new guys today, good putters, real good putters, they have still the same problem they had 25, 30, 40 years ago.
What's that? With the
they just can't get the ball in the hole. and it's now in the last year or so, the greens are so smooth that they're playing, and they are their putts are going down, going from 28 down to 22, 24, 25.
I tell you, everybody that I've talked to said that. They just said he was a gentleman and kindly and all of that.
He was a fine gentleman. Always a fine gentleman, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the book is about the social part of being a pro. Because when he got here from Scotland in 1899, the golf pro was kind. It was almost like a servant class, or that's what Bobby Jones said.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, right.
He was like, he was living in one-room tenement house in...
Right.
In Watertown in Boston there when he first got here at Oakley. And then he was living in a boarding house in Pinehurst when he first got here as well.
Yeah.
And then, but I think that the head club pros at different places, I don't think they realize how much it's changed since then, because it's middle class life for all those guys. And I think that having read through that stuff, you know how it seemed like Walter Hagen changed things for the touring pros, where they got treated better, where they finally started letting them into the clubhouses and stuff like that. And so it was Hagen, really, I think, that more than anybody else, it changed the touring pro. But I think Donald Ross did pretty much the same thing for the club pros.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that before I started writing the book.
I never saw him as anybody else but a golf architect that built that golf course. And I didn't realize that he had anything to do with a clubhouse or anything to speak of, but he did, you know?
From reading all the material, it looked to me like he came to resemble old Tom Morris a lot. And the old Tom had his hands in like every part of the game in Scotland. I mean, he was building courses, he was building clubs, he was running tournaments, and it was kind of his personality. He kind of shaped the game from what it was. And it seemed to me that Ross, this would be a good question to ask you. I couldn't find anybody that was more influential in the United States as far as the development of the game. You're talking like from 1900 to 1930 or whatever. I couldn't find anybody that was more, had a bigger influence on how the game developed in the United States. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that or not, but it seemed to me that he was the most influential person. And
yeah, he was. He was, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it had to do with just his personality. From what I gather, he was just the kind of guy that if you met him, you just felt great respect for.
Yeah, he was that way. And he was that way, and everybody around him. And it was O'Toole, or what the hell was the name?
There was a bunch of guys. There was Tufts, who was there. There was Maples, was one of his guys. He had a lot of guys that worked for him, but he had this really close group.
Yeah.
And that's what Tom Paul was telling me, that you were starting to get interested in some of the the associates that worked for him. But he had a really, we had a lot of people that worked in all the different clubs, or making clubs, in the shops. But he had this really close group that he really...
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, there was a draftsman named Walter Irving Johnson who did these...
Walter Johnson, yeah, that's right.
He was one of the guys. He was an engineer from New York. Or actually, no, I'm sorry, Massachusetts, I believe. He went to school in New York. Yeah. And then Eric Nelson. And then there was Walter Hatch, was the first guy that he was a professor at University of Massachusetts, which was Amherst. And he and J.B. McGovern were his two main superintendents.
Yeah.
So he had these guys, and they were a very tight group. And it seemed to me that if you worked for Donald Ross, then you looked right, you acted right. Like your wife was saying about Bruce Mashburn, you know, that he was wearing a starched white shirt out there and that kind of thing. I mean, all the photographs you see of Donald Ross, he's in a three-piece suit. There's not a picture of him without at least a tie on, you know. Usually he's wearing a suit out there and when he's making the course. So writing the book has been a great deal of fun. Yeah. It really is. And I want to send you a copy or advance copy so you can look through it if you like. And just for your own pleasure. Yeah, it's just fascinating because, I mean, I grew up in Pinehurst. I lived here for years, but there was so much that I didn't realize. And so I've really enjoyed that.
It's amazing how much you find out about him that was past. And I was with him those 4, 5, 6 years. Right there. Well, he was something else. He was great. I've got to know a few other architects, but
right.
They all drew plans, and they all had people build them.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah. I have never drawn a plan. I just go out and stake it out.
Well, you know, that's how Ross worked with number two. He didn't do it. That's about the only course there's no drawings of. Because he lived right there and he shaped it here and there over the years.
Yeah. Where do you live now?
I live in Southern Pines, which is right beside Pinehurst.
Oh, my God. You're right there. How's Peggy doing?
She's doing pretty good. She seems in good spirits. And I grew up with her around. Her son was on my golf team. And, yep, she was a terrific person to have around. Just a pleasure.
She went to Rollins before I went to Rollins.
Yeah, she won the title holders in 1949, which was at Augusta Country Club. Not Augusta National, but the Country Club, which it was kind of the female masters, I believe.
Yeah, right.
She'll talk about this, getting a lesson from Tommy Armour, this kind of thing. So it's...
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. I can't tell you.
I appreciate your call.
Okay. Well, you have a good evening.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.